Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to New Heights Show on Education. This is your host, Kathy Woodring. First, I want to thank Pamela Clark, founder and director of New Heights Educational Group, for all her help with co-hosting and her direction, which is greatly appreciated. Today's show topic is the Age of Reason and Thomas Paine philosophies. You can call in to speak with us anytime during this show at 347-633-9225 or contact New Heights at 419-786-0247 or New Heights Education at yahoo.com or visit the site at www.newheightseducation.org. You can also chat with us live during any of the shows. Please remember to push follow us for updates on upcoming shows, or you can visit our website to see host bios and keep track of your favorite host and our shows. New Heights continues to offer its biweekly enrichment day and or co-op classes. Next class will be on March 14th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Classes will be held in the Defiance at the Zion Lutheran Church. Please note that the classes are not religion-based unless families want there to be one. Parents and students are required to participate in these classes and help with the planning of them. We are offering a reading time, science class, Irish dancing, and karate, and are open to more suggestions. Students are invited to not only attend but participate in instructing some of the classes. If you are interested in participating, volunteering, or tutoring, please contact us directly. Our teachers are needed. We are in need of tutors and our teachers in Defiance and Putnam County. Anyone that would like to volunteer should contact us directly. There are also some paid opportunities. We currently need reading tutors. New Heights is currently in need of a home for our library. We need to move from our current location by March 25th. If you can help, please contact us as soon as possible. We are planning a bake sale, candle sale, for this Sunday, March the 9th, 2014. But we could not obtain an indoor space to hold this event. We are now planning to hold this on April 5th, 2014 at the North Town Mall. Check our site for more information and updates. Now to our show topic, The Age of Reason and Thomas Paine Philosophies. This episode describes society before, during the writings of Thomas Paine and how Paine influenced society. Paine seems to be integral to colonial thinking and the thinking of our founding fathers. All About History.org describes society before Paine. Here The Age of Reason or Open Society is addressed. All About History.org states that the Age of Reason was an 18th century movement which followed hard after the mysticism, religion, and superstition of the Middle Ages. The Age of Reason represented a genesis in the way man viewed himself, the pursuit of knowledge, and the universe. In this time period, man previously held concepts of conduct and thought could now be challenged verbally and written form. Fears of being labeled a heretic or being burned at the stake were done away with. This was the beginning of an open society where individuals were free to pursue individual happiness and liberty. Politically and socially, the imperial concepts of the medieval world were abandoned. The Age of Reason included the shorter time period described as the Age of Enlightenment. During this time, great changes occurred in scientific thought and exploration. New ideas filled the horizon, and man was eager to explore these ideas freely. German philosopher Immanuel Kant defined enlightenment in this way: enlightenment is the liberation of man from his self-caused state of minority. Minority is the incapacity of using one's understanding without the direction of another. The state of minority is self-caused when its source lies not in a lack of understanding, but in a lack of determination to use it, to use understanding without the assistance of another. The Age of Reason need not necessarily be viewed as a high point in the history of man. Man began to embrace an exaggerated belief in the perfection of humanity based on reason and clear thinking. They happily abandoned reliance on biblical truth and lost their fear of God. Leaving the medieval extremes of mysticism and superstition, they swung to the other extremes of reason and rationality, overlooking the subtle shades of gray in between. All About History Org continues with mention that the Age of Reason brought about a great change in the tale of man's sojourn on earth. Reason, rationality, and enlightenment became the new gods. For the previous 1,700 years, the perfection of man was only to be obtained through grace after death. The Protestant revolt to the Catholic Church and the subsequent holy wars had done nothing to change the accepted underlying beliefs of society. Revelation was the source of ultimate truth and could only be received as a communication from God. This was the basis of Christianity. Now in this new age, man felt obliged to follow his own intellect, not revealed truth. Earth and emphasis on nature became the new dogma. Miracles, prophecy, and religious rites were mere superstitions. Reason, philosophy, is defined as the ability to form and operate upon concepts in abstraction, narrowing information to its bare content without emotion. Rationality carries the dual implication of ordered inference and comprehension, along with understanding and explanation. Enlightenment is more or less the application of reason and rationality to previously held beliefs, resulting in broader, clearer thinking. The Age of Reason saw the introduction of the scientific revolution and various progressions of new schools of thought. Dualism, advocated by Descartes, taught that God, or mind, and man, or nature, were distinct. Baruch Spinoza introduced the idea of pantheism, namely God and the universe are one, and further that God was a substance consisting of infinite attributes. Believers in deism, described as the religion of reason, rejected Christianity as a body of revelation, mysterious and incomprehensible. God's revelation, believed deists, was simple, logical, and clear-cut, a natural religion which always existed. All About History Org continues with Age of Reason, the Christian view. The Age of Reason was fraught with attacks on basic Christian beliefs, rejection of God, and denial of miracles. In an attempt to divorce himself from the mysticism of the Middle Ages, man during the Age of Reason applauded intellect and disdained spirit. God was believed to be unknowable, if he existed at all, and certainly there was no need for divine communication or revelation. Nature was revelation enough, showing all that needed to be known of God. Man was now free to postulate his own theories of existence and ideas about Earth and its relation to the sun. The irony of this period is though man thought and believed himself to be enlightened, he missed the basic truths that would have been clear to him had he not hardened his heart in the denunciation of God. Yes, indeed, God is revealed in nature. The heavens declare the glory of God. The skies proclaim the work of his hands. Day after day they pour forth speech. Night after night they display knowledge. In Psalms chapter 19, verse 1 through 2, the glory of God is clearly revealed in the works of God's hands. He alone is the giver of wisdom and knowledge. In deviating from the Bible, God's word, as absolute truth, man has formulated all kinds of theories to explain his world. But as 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 19a says, "For the wisdom of this world is foolishness in God's sight." God can only be found through the heart of faith. God has created man with the ability to think, discover, and reason. But all searching must first begin with God, recognizing him as the author of all things and the one with absolute power and authority. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. All who follow his precepts have good understanding. To him belongs eternal praise. Psalm 111:10. Thomas Paine did not share this Christian view based on the following entry from Wikipedia. The Age of Reason, being an investigation of true and fabulous theology, is a pamphlet written by a British and American revolutionary, Thomas Paine, that challenges institutionalized religion and the legitimacy of the Bible, the central text of Christianity. Published in three parts in 1794, 1795, and 1807, it was a bestseller in the United States, where it caused a short-lived deistic revival. British audiences, however, fearing increased political radicalism as a result of the French Revolution, received this pamphlet with more hostility. The Age of Reason presents common deistic arguments. For example, it highlights what Paine saw as corruption of the Christian church and criticizes its efforts to acquire political power. Paine advocates reason in the place of revelation, leading him to reject miracles and view the Bible as an ordinary piece of literature rather than as a divinely inspired text. It promotes natural religion and argues for the existence of a creator God. Most of Paine's arguments had long been available to the educated elite, but by presenting them in an engaging and irreverent style, he made deism appealing and accessible to a mass audience. The book was also inexpensive, putting it within the reach of a large number of buyers. Fearing the spread of what they viewed as potentially revolutionary ideas, the British government prosecuted printers and booksellers who tried to publish and distribute Paine's book. Nevertheless, Paine's work inspired and guided many free thinkers. Paine's book followed in the tradition of early 18th century British deism. These deists, while maintaining individual positions, still shared several sets of assumptions and arguments that Paine articulated in The Age of Reason. The most important position that united the early deists was their call for free, rational inquiry into all subjects, especially religion. Saying that early Christianity was founded on freedom of conscience, they demanded religious toleration and an end to religious persecution. They also demanded that debate rest on reason and rationality. Deists embraced a Newtonian worldview, and they believed all things in the universe, even God, must obey the laws of nature. Without a concept of natural law, the deists argued, explanations of the workings of nature would descend into irrationality. This belief in natural law drove their skepticism of miracles. Because miracles had to be observed to be validated, deists rejected the accounts laid out in the Bible of God's miracles and argued that such evidence was neither sufficient nor necessary to prove the existence of God. Along these lines, deistic writings insisted that God, as the first cause or prime mover, had created and designed the universe with natural laws as part of his plan. They hold that God does not repeatedly alter his plan by suspending natural laws to miraculously intervene in human affairs. Deists also rejected the claim that there was only one revealed religious truth or one true faith. Religion could only be simple, apparent, ordinary, and universal if it was to be the logical product of a benevolent God. They therefore distinguished between revealed religions, which they rejected, such as Christianity, and natural religion, a set of universal beliefs derived from the natural world that demonstrated God's existence. They were thus not atheists. While some deists accepted revelation, most argued that revelation's restriction to small groups or even a single person limited its explanatory power. Moreover, many found that the Christian revelations in particular to be contradictory and irreconcilable. According to these writers, revelation could reinforce the evidence for God's existence already apparent in the natural world, but more often it led to superstition among the masses. Most deists argued that priests had deliberately corrupted Christianity for their own gain by promoting the acceptance of miracles, unnecessary rituals, and illogical and dangerous doctrines. These accusations were typically referred to as priestcraft. The worst of these doctrines was original sin. By convincing people that they required a priest's help to overcome their innate sinfulness, deists argued, religious leaders had enslaved the human population. Deists, therefore, typically viewed themselves as intellectual liberators. Another entry in Wikipedia links Thomas Paine's philosophy to the Finder's philosophy. In the United States, Enlightenment philosophy, which itself was heavily inspired by deist ideals, played a major role in creating the principle of religious freedom expressed in Thomas Jefferson's letters and included in the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. American founding fathers were framers of the Constitution who were especially noted for being influenced by such philosophy include Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, Cornelius Harnett, Governor Morris, and Hugh Williamson. Their political speeches show distinct deistic influence. Other notable founding fathers may have been more directly deist. These include James Madison, possibly Alexander Hamilton, Ethan Allen, and Thomas Paine, who published The Age of Reason, a treatise that helped to popularize deism throughout the USA and Europe. A major contributor was Elihu Palmer, 1764 to 1806, who wrote The Bible of American Deism in his Principles of Nature, 1801, and attempted to organize deism by forming the Deistical Society of New York. In the United States, there was controversy over whether the founding fathers were Christians, deists, or something in between. Another Wikipedia post addresses the revolutionary aspect of the 18th century. Was mentioned that by the time Part 1 of The Age of Reason was published in 1794, many British and French citizens had become disillusioned by the French Revolution. The Reign of Terror had begun. Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette had been tried and executed, and Britain was at war with France. Those few British radicals who still supported the French Revolution and its ideals were viewed with deep suspicion by their countrymen. The Age of Reason belongs to this latter more radical stage of British political reform movement, one that openly embraced republicanism and atheism, and is exemplified by such texts as William Godwin's Political Justice, 1793. By sermon on political, by the middle of the decade, the moderate voices had disappeared. Richard Price, the dissenting minister whose sermon on political liberty had promoted Edmund Burke's Reflections on the Revolution in France, 1790, had died in 1791, and Joseph Priestley had been forced to flee to America after a Church and King mob burned down his home and church. The conservative government, headed by William Pitt, responded to this increasing radicalization by prosecuting several reformers for this seditious libel and treason in the famous 1794 treason trials. Following the trials and an attack on George III, conservatives were successful in passing the Seditious Meetings Act and the Treasonable Practices Act, also known as the Two Acts, or the Gagging Acts. These acts prohibited freedom of assembly for groups such as the Radical London Corresponding Society, LCS, and encouraged indictments against radicals for libelous and seditious statements. Afraid of prosecution and disenchantment. Pages 4 to 5 continues with an anecdote that Benjamin Rush, the Philadelphia physician and signer of the Declaration of Independence, liked to tell in his old age. On July 4, 1776, just after the Continental Congress had finished making its revisions of the Declaration and sent it off to the printer for publication, Rush overheard a conversation between Benjamin Harrison of Virginia and Gary. "I shall have a great advantage over you, Mr. Gary," said Harrison, "when we are all hung for what we are now doing. From the size and weight of my body, I shall die in a few minutes, but from the lightness of your body, you will dance in the air for an hour or two before you are dead." Rush recalled that the comet procured a transient smile, but it was soon succeeded by the solemnity with which the whole business was conducted. Ellis continues with the following comment: "Based on what we now know about the military history of the American Revolution, is that if the British commanders had prosecuted the war more vigorously in its earliest stages, the Continental Army might very well have been destroyed at the start, and the movement for American independence nipped in the bud. The signers of the Declaration would then have been hunted down, tried, and executed for treason, and American history would have flowed forward in a wholly different direction. In the long run, the evolution of an independent American nation, gradually developing its political and economic strength over the 19th century with the protective constraints of the British Empire, was probably inevitable. This was Paine's point, but this was not the way history happened. The creation of a separate American nation occurred suddenly rather than gradually, in revolutionary rather than evolutionary fashion. The decisive events that shaped the political ideas and institutions of the emerging state, all taking place with dynamic intensity during the last quarter of the 18th century. No one present at the start knew how it would turn out in the end. What, in retrospect, has the look of a foreordained unfolding of God's will was in reality an improvisational affair in which sheer chance, pure luck, both good and bad, and specific decisions made in the crucible of specific military and political crises determined the outcome. At the dawn of a new century, indeed a new millennium, the United States is now the oldest enduring republic in world history, with a set of political institutions and traditions that have stood the test of time. The basic framework for all these institutions and traditions was built in a sudden spasm of enforced inspiration and makeshift construction during the final decades of the 18th century. On page 6, Ellis continues that though there have been many successful colonial rebellions against imperial domination since the American Revolution, none had occurred before. Taken together, the British Army and Navy constituted the most powerful military force in the world. Destined in the course of the succeeding century to defeat all national competitors for its claim as the first hegemonic power of the modern era. The next episode will continue with colonial philosophy, especially the philosophy of Thomas Paine. Thanks for listening, and please remember to join host Sadia Yigaz Friday at 6 p.m. Saturdays, you can join host Kaden Behan for her show starting at 6 p.m. Sundays, you can join me, Kathy Woodring, for my show at 11 p.m. Thanks again to Pamela Clark, founder of New Heights Educational Group, for her help with hosting and all she does. Thanks for listening, and have a great night.
You raise